In this video, we are going to be talking about the pre-code film from 1932, Red-Headed Woman, which starred Jean Harlow and Chester Morris, and it was directed by Jack Conway. My guest today is Vanessa Butino, who is a writer, and she's been on the show many times, of course. So Vanessa, welcome back. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me back. Hey, everyone.
I love these pre-code films. I mean, I still can't get over that when they were made, especially like this one, which we'll get into in particular. So how do you feel about Red-Headed Woman? Is this one that you like a lot?
Yeah. I've always loved this one. And I'm not going to say that it's a fantastic movie because it's not the best pre-code I've seen. People may feel differently, but it's not the best one, but it's certainly a very good one. And I, like you said, I can't believe that this was released in 1932 because the subject matter just seems so modern.
Oh, yeah.
I think this film is almost 100 years old. It's crazy.
Yeah. 89 years as of this year, which is remarkable. I couldn't believe how much it resembled Babyface, which we talked about last time. But this was the year prior to Babyface. But, you know, what's different here? I mean, we have that similar plot where a woman is using men sexually in order to advance in society. But whereas we don't see the backstory with the Jean Harlow character where we do with Barbara Stanwyck, which is, it was so empathetic. And in this way, we don't know why she wants to do what she's doing. So do you think that's problematic looking at it from 2021 to see like a quote unquote, you know, these gold digger character, or what do you think?
No, I don't see it as being problematic, but I think the major difference, if we're going to compare Red-Headed Woman to Babyface, I think the major difference is that Barbara Stanwyck's character, like you said, is very likable.
Yeah.
And we, the audience, feel very sympathetic towards her. Whereas in Red-Headed Woman, Jean Harlow's character, Lillian, she's not likable at all. In fact, like even if you love Jean Harlow, which I myself do, I absolutely adore Jean Harlow. I can't help hating her in this movie because she is not a likable character. And I think if the story had, or if the film had explored her backstory more, perhaps I would have liked her a little bit better.
Yeah.
But no, she's not a likable character. But that in itself is very interesting because you don't often see classic films where the main character is unlikable.
Yeah, no, I agree. And even even the men, really. I mean, you see her sleeping around, she's cheating, she's making calculated moves in order to get ahead, but at the same time the men are also cheating, and the men are hypocritical and abusive. I mean, that one scene, I was so shocked when Bill, who plays Chester Morris, who plays the man she marries, and of course he's married, and as we know, she's been trying to get with him, they've had an affair, and she will not stop. I mean, it's amazing how much she was committed to getting him away from his wife. And that scene where, you know, he comes to her place and tells her to stop and starts to hit her because she keeps seducing him, and he likes it. I mean, he can't help but fall for her. And then that scene, and they do it in a tongue-in-cheek way where she puts the key down her dress, and she's almost aroused by the fact that she's being hit. I mean, I was so shocked, that they had that. But I thought it was so unique that everyone in this movie is so flawed, is so highly and not and complex. And I think those are the kind of movies I like. Everybody is really up, has some bad motives.
You're right in saying that almost every single character on screen in this film has flaws.
Yeah.
I would say except for the wife.
That's what I thought.
Played by Layla Hyams.
That's right.
Oh my God, she's fantastic.
She was really good.
However, so she's the only character in this film that I felt sorry for.
Me too.
But there is one scene where Chester Morris, as her ex-husband now because they've divorced, where he kind of apologizes and said, oh, you know, I'm sorry this all happened. I should never have left you. And she says something like, oh, you know, part of it was my fault because I should have fought harder for you. And don't say that. Oh my goodness. You were on such a high pedestal for me until that point, and then you just dropped down a little bit. It's not your fault. But in 1932, if a married couple, if one of them committed adultery, it was often looked at as the woman's fault, as the wife's fault. So I mean, that just goes with the times. But to hear that now in 2021, it's like, oh no, don't say that.
Yeah, that I thought that too. At the same time, I can understand that when things go wrong in relationships, we often do think it has to have been something we did. Not that she did anything, but you can't help but have those, you know, doubts or insecurities pop up. Just that in her way, it's such in the way in which she did it, it's you know, it's like, it's horrific that she would even take that point of view.
Yeah.
Instead of, you know, looking at, you know, what really went wrong. I mean, Chester Morris, who plays the husband, he just can't help it. But we've seen that in films later, Fatal Attraction's more of like a neo-noir, but a guy like Michael Douglas, he's in like a good marriage, you know? Yeah. And it's just one of those, not that I agree with it, but it's like, you know, you meet someone in a certain setting and sometimes, unfortunately, you make a bad choice and you go for it. But in his case, he kept making the same bad choice over and over again. I mean, I know she was initiating it, but still, I mean, you have to, you can just walk away. And he just couldn't help it. And at the same time, it's told with a real tongue in cheek. Like, there's a lot of great humor. I mean, even off the top, when, you know, she gets the red hair dyed and, you know, a gentleman prefer blondes, don't do they? And sure enough, there's this redheaded woman who stands out. And I love right away, you see how she knows, she understands something about men, which is that they're motivated by sex, that bootlegger off the top, you know, she makes out with him a little bit, and then as a way to get rid of him, oh, you know, this guy, the guy working here was giving me a hard time, and then boom, his ego and his pride just starts to fight with the other guy. She walks out. I thought that is so great because it says so much about what she was capable of and what she knew in just that one short scene. Do you find this film funny?
I find parts funny.
Yeah.
Any word that comes out of Una Merkel's mouth. So Una Merkel played Sally.
Oh, the friend.
Lillian's best friend.
She was hilarious. My God.
Every line Una Merkel says is hilarious. But she's like that in every single movie she's been in. So she's just an utter delight. You know what? Like you said, this film is very tongue in cheek.
Very much.
It does not shy away from suggestive material.
Yeah.
And parts of it are hilarious.
Yeah, and apparently that was intentional because I'm sure you know F. Scott Fitzgerald wrote the script and wrote it very seriously, and the producer brought in another writer in order to lighten it up. Anita Loos.
Yes.
Again, a female screenwriter. Right,
and she was very popular at the time, and she actually went on to pen Gentlemen Prefer Blondes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So she was very popular.
Well, I think that's the right choice, because I think if it was told really, really seriously, you know, it was already like banned in the UK. I mean, I think it would have been even harder to swallow. She tries to kill this guy. She's cheating. There's premarital sex. And even that scene, women undressing, like when they're getting ready for bed, You don't really see anything. I think for like a split second, you see something.
Yes.
But it's just incredible. And even when she's getting hit, they make it a little comedic because as she puts the key down her dress, and it's clever editing, he approaches it, you keep hearing the smack, but then it's the judge, what is that thing
the
called?
The gavel.
Is that what it's called? I never even knew that. Yeah. As he's adjourning for the it's the same noise as a slap in the divorce hearing. And I just thought, oh my God, that is so daring.
Mm-hmm. MGM, which is the studio that released this film, they got away with a lot in this particular movie.
Yeah, they really did.
Yeah, and you're right about it being banned in the UK. I think this Redheaded Woman was released in North America in 1932, and I don't think it was actually passed in the UK until, I want to say 1965, but I could be wrong on that. So like mid-60s. Can you imagine for 30 years a film is banned? And then finally in the mid-60s, as the code is, you know, self-combusting, it finally is approved for overseas. That's crazy.
Wow. That's like, sometimes it's unbelievable to me. I mean, even things that we still see today, I'm like, what year are you in? You know, it's such a sliding scale in the world we live in. Another thing though, as highly as flawed as they are, there is a real strength about her. I mean, she's tough. I mean, she really, if you cross her, she was like, whether it was when the man she eventually marries, when he says, I'll meet you at 10 tomorrow, and then doesn't show up.
Yeah.
I mean, she goes over there and really tells him off. And even at the end, all the society people at that party, they go to her party and then immediately after go to another party. And it was intentional. So they'll put it in the newspapers and make her look bad and that they didn't like her. I mean, she just gives them hell. Whereas her husband is very passive. I mean, no one wants to meet her because the guy was divorced and I don't want anything to do with your wife because you're your second wife. So he lets it go. I mean, he doesn't stand up for anything. I was like, you know, clearly he just married her because he was attracted to her. I don't think there was anything more in their relationship. You know, I mean, what did you think?
I think part of the reason why it's said in the movie that Chester Morris and Layla Hyams, his first wife in the film, that they were basically childhood sweethearts. So the two of them have only ever known what love is with each other.
Right.
So I think the appeal for Chester Morris's character is that he was craving some kind of excitement that he wasn't getting with his wife, who he's known since they were children. So for him, the appeal was, you know, excitement, sex, stuff that he doesn't have with his wife anymore.
Right.
I don't think he ever really loved Lillian, Jean Harlow's character. About sex. And that's actually brought up in the movie where Layla Hyams, I think this is after she divorces Chester Morris, where she confronts him and says, you know, this is not going to last. Yeah. Whatever you have with her is just based on sex. It's not love. And she's absolutely right.
Yeah, I agree. I believe she said that to both of them, right? She shows up and really...
Yeah.
So there was a real strength with her as well. I mean, she doesn't just take it and walk away, even though we saw scenes where she was blaming herself. But then later on, I think she assesses it perfectly in terms of, you know, this is bullshit.
I think in this film, it's funny that now that we're having this conversation, I never really thought of this before, but almost the gender roles are reversed in this film compared to other classic films where the women are the ones who have power and control and force in this film. Whereas in many or the majority of classic films that we watch, it's usually the men who are the ones with the power and the force and the strength. And in this film, the men just... I mean, they have no spine, no balls whatsoever in this film.
That really popped out to me. Their way of dealing with things is to just write a check and get rid of her, you know, or just they don't want to just deal with things head on, whereas she really will. I mean, she's willing to confront, she's willing to fight, and whereas, you know, they just use their resources. And I mean, I thought that scene was also when the father was trying to get her to go to New York, and he writes a check for $500, and then she forgets it, and she goes back and
takes it.
I thought that was hilarious, you know. But she really shows them in the end. I mean, the movie doesn't even really end, because she just kind of goes on to her next.
No, and you know what? This is the character who's done so much sinning in the whole film. She's never ever punished at the end.
Yeah, that's true.
As much as you don't like her character. And yeah. I'm talking about Jean Harlow's character. As much as you don't like her, you're still kind of pleased that she got away with everything in the end, and that she was never punished, which in most Hollywood movies, you are punished at the end if you've done something wrong.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. If people look at these pre-code films, I mean, they hold up so well. I mean, I haven't seen every pre-code that's ever been made, but it's just, they're incredibly progressive and incredibly relevant, and they offer so much in terms of not just, like, I think when we think prequel, people think like sex and the raunchiness, but there's a lot of
it goes deeper than that. There's a lot more than just the sex.
No, absolutely. But there is, sorry, go ahead.
There's one thing I wanted to ask you. So what did I know, how have you seen many Jean Harlow films so far, or is this one of your first?
I think I've only, she was in Public Enemy, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's the only one I've seen of hers.
Okay.
And now this one. I don't know her career very well. I mean, I know she died when she was very young, at 26. Yes. I was just reading about that earlier, that it was all these different theories about why her health, her kidney problems were neglected and stuff like that. But no, I haven't. I've only seen Public Enemy,
What do you think of her in terms of, like, do you think she was a good actress in Redheaded Woman and Public Enemy? Or, what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, I mean, again, interesting you asked that, because I think you have to sometimes look at it for the context of when it was made. I mean, you had very few actors at that time, particularly because they were in silent films, who could be very truthful and natural and spontaneous on screen. I mean, Barbara Stanwyck certainly could do it.
Yeah,
I mean, she was incredible. So in this film, like, she is like yelling, or she's screaming, or she's telling someone off, but there's nothing behind it. There's no. She's not actually experiencing those feelings. I mean, she was natural in terms of being seductive and certain qualities that she could do very easily. But when she had to get upset, even that scene, I mean, I like the scene when she broke that frame when he didn't show up to meet her, and the frame of her that she later marries, and she smashes it. But she's not upset for real. The actress didn't actually have those feelings. So it's quite hammy. I mean, everybody, as I said back then, really was. Even who plays her husband, he was better in this film, but in other films I've seen, you can see he's not listening to the other actor. It's very mapped out, his performance. He was better in this one. It didn't feel as artificial, but that was what I took from her. But at the same time, it doesn't make the movie not enjoyable. I still enjoy it, even though I'm not seeing an actor really, really experiencing that feeling, but you still like it you can get away with that if the story is really compelling, I find. But I don't know what you thought about her in this.
As a huge Jean Harlow fan, I have to agree with everything you've just said. The word hammy and camp applies to her performance in this. So
yeah.
I've read a few books on Jean Harlow, and in almost every single one, the author mentions that Jean Harlow, she never sought to become an actress. She was never really interested in becoming an actress. It just happened as a coincidence. She was, I think, maybe 18, 19 years old, and she was dropping off one of her friends at Fox Studios because her friend was working there and her friend needed a ride. So she just dropped her off at the studio. And that's how she was discovered. From Fox spotted her in the car and said, do you want to come in to Central Casting and start working? And she laughed it off. She had no desire to become a film star. And she never had that natural talent in front of the film, in front of the camera. So in her early pictures, I would say from the late 20s, because she did, she was in some silent films. So from the late 20s to maybe 1933, 1934, she wasn't a good actress. She was a wonderful performer.
Yeah.
And she certainly had on-screen chemistry with the people she worked with.
Right, right.
But she was not a good actress.
No.
I think she developed into a great actress and comedic performer later on in her career. Now, unfortunately, the last film she made was in 1937, came out in 1937, and she passed away very early at the age of 26. So she never really had a chance to go on. If she had lived longer and made more films, I think she would have kept developing, and she would have just been an incredible performer. As it stands, with the films she had made, you could see her growth. So if you start from the very beginning, even like you said, Public Enemy, that's 1931. I mean, she was so wooden. It was just like she was standing in front of the camera. Doing the movements that the director told her to do and just reciting lines. That's all it was.
I remember
But then when you go to a film like Libeled Lady, which was released, I believe, in 1936, you can't take your eyes off her. She is such a natural on screen. So you could, if you go from start to finish in terms of the film she made, you can definitely see a development of talent there. And she was just incredible. So I understand what you're saying. When you see Redheaded Woman, and that's, you know, the first experience watching a Jean Harlow movie, you're not going to think that she's the world's greatest actress. And that's okay, because at that time she wasn't.
That's interesting, you know. At the same time, it's there wasn't anywhere for these actors in the early 30s to go to learn to be real on camera. I mean, either the ones who could do it just really had a natural instinct for it, like Stanwyck and Cagney and actors like that, or there was no guidance for it. There was no training. I mean, this is before Stanislavski or Method. I mean, that was just beginning to blossom in theater, where the group theater, they were, but that was in New York, you know, so it was years before it had gotten to Hollywood, you know. And the people who, like Gable, was also very good, very natural. I mean, you know, I think often the people we look back on had it, or they had different qualities that people were very, very, very fond of. But you know what, Louis Stone was pretty good too. And I know we already mentioned Lila Hyams.
Yeah, she's fantastic.
And Una Merkel, the friend, was, I mean, you know, like I say, and Charles Boyer was the French lover later.
The chauffeur. Yeah, this was one of his first film roles.
You know, but it's really interesting to watch the performances back then, because I think there a lot more was required from Harlow. Like she had to go through so much range of emotions, whereas you know, Louis Stone had to be stern and serious. I think there were certain qualities that maybe some of the women and men, I don't know their backstory, but they were more comfortable with. It was a natural thing. But it's a lot harder to do Jean Harlow's parts, because as we've discussed, there's so much behavior from this character. So, but it, but you know, like I said, you still really, really enjoy it. I really enjoyed it, regardless of that. Was there anything else that you wanted to mention about this film?
No, I think that was it. But I guess anyone who's watching, if you've never seen a pre-code before, this is a good one to start with.
Yeah.
For sure. It's not, again, it's not the best pre-code, but it's a good one to start with.
Yeah, no, I agree. And this is on the Criterion channel, so you can see it there. Again, it's very short, hour and 20 minutes, and I thought it was really, really good. Well, Vanessa, thanks again for joining me. It's always a pleasure.
Oh, thanks for having me back. Thank you.
No, anytime. And for those of you watching, thank you so much. Please consider subscribing to my channel if you haven't already done so. It's absolutely free. You will see my logo, the Robert Bellissimo at the Movies logo, floating above your head, to your top left. Just click on that and then click the bell in order to get a notification every time I release a new video or go live. I want to thank everyone who's a Patreon member of mine. I now have a pre-code newsletter every single month where I talk about my pre-code journey, as it's still very new for me, and what I've been watching and discovering and learning, or what I already discovered. And the link to my Patreon is in the description box below as well. And thanks again, and I will see you in the next video.